Hi, it's Clint and Lyndon.
Welcome to Shove It Up Your Arwen.
As always, our opinions are our own and should be taken with a pinch of salt.
At the sound of the Arwen cow, enjoy the episode.
Hello, this is not your conscience. Just so you know. Okay. I am one of your hosts, Clinton. You can find me on Instagram at Clinty Skyguy.
Okay. And I'm Lyndon, the other host.
Yeah.
And you can find me on Instagram, although not really at the moment. Pilgrim in the Mist.
Well, not at the moment, no.
Well, it's there, but I'm not.
You're not.
Because of Lent.
Because of Lent. Yes. Lenten promise.
The power of Christ compels me.
Yes.
To stay away.
As it does.
I'm coming over here, because you're too close.
I'm too close, okay.
And I don't like the cut of your jib.
I didn't wear my jib today.
Did you?
No. Yeah.
And what's the smell?
Well, it's just my... that's my giblets.
It's just your fetid exterior.
My fetid, frothing exterior. I don't know why it's frothing.
Have you got myxomatosis?
You got myxomatosis? Oh, it's a mixy bunny. So, how's you? All good?
Yeah. I'm good.
Lovely.
I'm good.
All right.
If I say it aggressively enough, it'll be true.
Aggressive positivity and all that.
I'm good.
You're good.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm tired of life, but I'm good.
Me too.
Yeah. It's still there, though. Every morning we wake up.
Every morning.
I'm still alive. Yay. Anyway, have you got a magical moment?
Yes.
Have you?
Yes. What's yours?
So mine is that, what did I do the other day? Oh, I had this in my head and thought, oh, this would be a really good magical moment, and then probably forgot it. I've been hexing randomly.
Okay.
Which has been quite fun. Not like big hexes, not like, a curse thee with pox, but just like little hexes to just make my day go quicker.
Okay.
It's been quite nice.
So like, yeasty vaginas.
Yeah, yeasty vaginas.
Gammy eyes
and myxomatosis and a bit of dropsy and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's been quite nice. It's been quite fun.
Okay. Like, you've been particularly vengeful recently.
Yeah, I have been. I've been having to, like, get it out somehow.
It's good to get it out.
Yeah, just got to get it out. No, just little things to just try and make the world go better, so
just to make you a bit happier,
just to make me a bit happier and get through my days. So I've been doing a lot more card reading. I've been doing a lot more. I rejigged loads of stuff and ordered loads of bits for my shrine so that I could really keep going with my daily devotions.
Okay.
So because I took a break from it, cause my lantern broke. I say broke. The wick burnt out.
Your lamp doth burn low.
Yeah, my lamp doth burn low, and it's my great grandmother's, so I had to buy a new wick for it. So I've got to, I had to do that. So I had to order a few bits.
I realized how smooth this pillow is. Stroke my hair.
Stop stroking.
Not my head hair, but
stop stroking this hair pillow with your ball bag. Like,
but it feels lovely.
But it feels so good on my neck. Yeah, so my magical moment is just that.
But tell me, darling, with all this cursing, have you been sure to protect yourself in case of times three?
There are only two reasons that you could be possibly giggling right now. Either my face is telling you to just shut the fuck up, or you realise how ridiculous you sound.
Both.
Yeah, both. Nah, of course I have. Because I have, I wear my protection on my right hand, so it's fine. Absolutely fine. But yeah, it's been good. It's been good being getting back to my roots.
Your roots.
My roots. And actually practicing.
Okay.
Actually practicing. Actively practicing. Like every day is an opportunity.
Okay. Every day is an opportunity to be a cunt to someone.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. And I make up for it by being nice to other people.
Oh, okay. Well, that's all right then, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, what's a little bit of maleficarum?
I'm a druid. We're all about balance. That's the point. Yeah, you know, if I'm a cunt to you, I'm nice to someone else. So don't take it too harshly.
You can't have the rose without the thorns.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. Have you met me? That's how it works.
I have, unfortunately.
I know.
I know it's, you quite well.
You do know me. You do know me quite well. It's a little. It's a little.
It's like gazing into the void. It scars you forever, and you can never unsee.
It's like gazing into the void, and then every now and again you hear.
Every now and then I wonder why my life is such a mess, and then I remember, oh yeah, you're my friend. That's why.
Oh, so true. So true. But yeah, it's been nice. It's been nice.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been good. Because it's like, it's been nice because it's been an opportunity to like grab back personal power, which has been quite nice. And kind of literally just grab that back and work with it and shit like that. So
yeah.
Yeah, I've been doing the core order of ritual and stuff like that. So I realised after the last episode when I had a bit of a meltdown, I was like, I hate the world, everything's so hard. I just thought, you know what, actually, I just need to practice like a solitary practitioner and stop giving a fuck. And that's what I've done.
Yeah, because I mean, I know you're a slag that loves community.
Yeah.
But there is something to be said about... Social butterfly. Yes, but there is something to be said about solo practice.
Yes.
The people personally, I abhor other people and I fucking hate working with other people. The thought of it makes me yak. But...
You're Catholic. You can't do it without other people. You have to go to church.
Well, yes, this is it. So, but, you know, once a week, in a room full of people for an hour that I don't have to talk to, and every now and then I give the sign of peace.
The sign of peas?
The sign of peas, yes.
Mm.
I can do that, that's fine. Mm. I can wish goodwill to all men at least once a week.
Yeah. Oh, no, I did enchant the sword to be the spirit house for the spirit of my home.
Nice.
To protect
your gubbins.
My home and all the people in it.
Nice.
Yeah.
This is good.
Yeah, no, that was a magical moment. That was quite good. Oh. I used the druid charm of hallowing to do it. That was good fun. Because
yes.
Wayne went to interrupt and he went, oh. Like, really awkwardly. He was like, Clint, oh. And then, like, ran out of the room.
See, I wish my husband had the, I don't know.
I was kind of brandishing a sword, like, like that in the living room in front of the fire. Like, when he came in and I was just like,
I love it.
Blood spurting everywhere as I was offering it to the gods. And he was just nice. Like, oh, I'll come back later.
Yeah, see,
I'll come.
So. My husband doesn't really understand stuff like that, so he'd just be like, what are you doing? And I'd have to stop and be like, fuck off.
I'm kicking my ass.
Get out!
Do you mind? Yeah. Yeah, no, you would. Sorry. But that was fun.
I'm good, I'm glad.
Yeah, I like the charm.
Tell us more of the other protections around your house.
Sorry?
Hmm?
Sorry, I didn't quite hear that.
Pardon?
Sorry.
What?
Say again. So who do what now? Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, lovely.
Oh, good. Yes. Good. Well, I'm glad for you.
Thanks. You condescending cunt.
Thank you.
What about your whole magical moment? What's your whole magical moment, bitch?
I met the devil.
In the bathhouse.
Oh, honey.
Yeah, honey. Oh, this is good.
I did.
Yeah, go on.
I did.
This is good. Yeah. You did, yeah.
I did, yeah.
He was sexy.
Oh, he was really fit. Oh, my God. He was. So I...
The devil wears a jockstrap.
And it smells like honey and sin. It was lovely. So I... it wasn't lovely. Well, it was. But
yes,
I,
it was.
Sorry, it, yes, was. It was.
It appealed to the... Ethical slut in you.
Ethical slut in me. So it was at the beginning of Lent, and I had a dream where I met... To say the devil is wrong, because there isn't one devil, but I met a devil. What?
Nothing.
I did. I met a devil.
You met a devil.
There's
only one.
There isn't only
one. Have you watched Exorcist?
Yes.
There is only one.
There is only one.
Anyway, go on. Sorry, I'm sorry. I'm being a...
I don't mind. So I met a devil. A devil of temptation.
A demon?
And I don't really remember too much...
Was it an incubus?
No, it wasn't an incubus.
Sure. Oh, yeah,
well, they didn't produce a sharp phallic cock.
Were you jizzy when you got up?
No. Do you know, I've never had a wet dream.
Neither have I. It's the weirdest thing to admit to somebody ever, and now we're doing it on a podcast, but no.
Okay. We're in good
neither,
company.
Neither am I. Neither have I. Weirdly enough, never.
No.
Shows me wank too much, that's what it is.
That's what it is.
I do hope our mothers don't listen to this podcast.
Mine does.
Oh, dear. Sorry, Mamu.
But yeah, so I met the devil. I don't remember much about the dream, but I do remember I managed to resist. And by resist, it makes it sound like it was, you know, get away from me, Satan! It was more like, no, I can't. I couldn't possibly. Thank you, but no. It was very much that. Thank you, but no.
Thanks, but
gorgeous,
I'm
but thank
busy.
You, but no.
Flattered.
So, no. But I do remember he was, it's really weird. I mean, it's dreams, right? It's dream logic. So, like, when you come out of a dream, you know something was good, but you can't really describe it.
Yeah.
I know he was really sexy. I couldn't tell you what he looked like.
Yeah, I get that.
But I know that they were very sexy. So I had that. And then after that, every couple of nights, for a good 3 weeks, they stopped now, but for a good couple of nights, really intense dreams of demons, angels, being trapped in hell, going to heaven, dreams of like eternal conflict and all that kind of stuff. Very like biblically heavy dreams. Yeah, weeks of it. Stop now. But I spoke to my priest about it, and I mentioned no details on here, of course, because you never know who could be listening. But I did mention our little group effort.
Little, oh, yes, yes. No details. Project. No details shall be shared about said group project for others may be watching. Mm. We don't know who may be watching.
So I did mention that. And my part of it was I did a novena, dedicated novena. And I told him what was involved in my part of it. And, well, I did, because there was nothing.
What was his reaction?
He was fine about it. Because my part, well, yeah, because my part of it is fine.
Oh, okay.
Well,
oh, what? Okay.
Yeah. I didn't, all I did was, like, I prayed for stuff.
Yeah.
And I said psalms. Yeah. But my prayers weren't malicious. They were actually quite good.
I mean, mine were.
Yours were. But that's fine.
Mine were really malicious.
You're not a good Christian woman.
No.
So, and he said to me, he was like, well, yeah, but like, he was like, the evil hates things like novenas because it shows true dedication. He's like, so you, if they're taking an interest in you, you've got to take it as a compliment because it shows that you're closer to godliness, honey. That's the only reason they take more interest. So I was like, okay, that's fine. But they left me alone now, so clearly I've slipped.
Yeah.
I'm not as heavy as
riddled,
I once was.
Riddled with sea.
Oh.
So they don't lag you anymore because they've already got a bit of you
so
in.
So that's my magical moment is...
You'd be dreaming about the devil.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah.
Which then leads us on to today's topic, which is...
The devil.
The devil.
So, how do you know the devil?
Well, I wanted to talk about this topic because, for me, obviously, as a good Catholic woman, it's it's an important topic.
Yes.
And I think it's important for other people that are not good Christian women to understand this topic, because I think there's a lot of ambiguity around the subject when you have... certain members of the pagan community that peddle this kind of horseshit idea about the cleric devil. And
yeah, so just to give a bit of context, both me and you think that the folkloric devil is a little bit of a fucking misnomer.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a bit
yeah
fucking stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, I and if it works for you, it works for you, but whatever.
Yeah. So I wanted to do this episode because I think it's important that when we get into the meat and gubbins of it, and we kind of set the record straight of the difference between the devil or a devil and a folkloric spirit, because there are differences.
Yeah.
And one is not the other.
No.
So, you know.
No. So I think there's an interesting thing with regards to magic practitioners and Christian theology. And I think what's really funny is that, and actually weird, to be fair, is that so much effort and time and work has been put in to kind of validate witchcraft as a thing and distance it from the ridicule of the Christian idea, to take it away from the satanic panic and all that sort of shit, which is detrimental. It's very detrimental to anybody practicing.
Yes.
You know, to then turn around and reincorporate the devil just seems really stupid.
It's
I know that sounds rude, and and to those people who really get on with it, like, I have absolutely no qualms with your practice, that's up to you, but for me it just seems incredibly counterintuitive, daft, and if you are trying to, like often we are, divorce yourself from Christian aspects, why would you then reintroduce the devil into your practice, into your craft?
It's almost like, so to get away from the satanic panic, people kind of, obviously Wicca kind of came around, and there was this whole kind of love and light, do as you will but harm you none, law of times three, control was, aspects.
But that was around before the satanic panic kind of hit off.
Yeah, but it helped to kind of alleviate it.
Yeah.
And then there was this whole, you know, all the triple goddess and the horned god, and they're separate and they're not the same. And it kind of seems like a lot of people kind of got sick of that and wanted to go back towards that kind of more grungier feet in the mud.
Yeah, it's taking a bit edgelordy, into the
woods. I mean, I took lamb hearts into the woods. I did deplorable things. But but there's this kind of this
flinging hobnobs at trees, and you're there with a lamb's heart going, and stabbing it.
And this kind of desire to kind of, it is a bit edgelordy, kind of get back in touch with something more kind of primal, more seductive, more being that witch making covenants in the woods kind of thing. That kind of, it comes back to that. You remember, I think it was just around the time before COVID hit, when there was that kind of growth spurt into magic, and we had a lot of like tweeny witch babies and things, but there was this real thirst for old knowledge. We need old knowledge, the knowledge of the old world. And it was like, okay, fair enough. It almost seems like it's kind of that. We need to kind of get back in touch with the old gods, you know, the primordial eldritch kind of creature that initiates the witch and blah, blah, blah. And okay, fine, whatever. But like, you've got to understand what you're communicating with. And what I tend to find, if you really listen, if people genuinely really listen, if you can strip away the kind of the sparkle and the glamour of these creatures online that kind of peddle this shit, and you really listen to what they say, when they talk about the folkloric devil, more often than not, what they'll do is they'll give you a snippet of what it could be, and then they'll kind of circle around and tell you something a bit more kind of in depth about its nature, and then they'll kind of circumvent it with something. So they'll hint at the sinister nature of it, and then they'll lace it with something kind of campy and fun. So it'll be like, I don't know, the folkloric devil. It's just, you know, it's something in folklore. It's this kind of primordial liminal spirit, the light between the horns, if you will. And then they'll say things like, you know, oh, and then there's stories of people making pacts with this spirit at crossroads, and then the spirit basically fucking them, because you have to seal your pact somehow. So like a man making a, there's a story, I can't remember what the actual name of the guy is, but he made a pact with this devil, got what he wanted. He lost everything in the end and went insane. But the devil basically pinned him down and fucked him. It kind of...
Sounds great.
Yeah. So then you'll get information that. But then they'll be like, oh, but who doesn't want that? You know, who doesn't want to get fucked by the devil? Oh, it's campy, it's fun, it's whatever. You can't... make light of the seriousness of it, but people eat it up. People get sucked in by it. They love it.
The thing that bothers me about it is that it's history misread.
Yes.
You know, if we're looking at... So people will go, well, it was the folkloric devil, because we're talking about folkloric magic from the, I don't know, let's say, because we're in England, medieval Britain.
Yes. Right?
So we've got folkloric magic from Lady Sybil, whatever, and like Alice Nutter and all these sorts of people, and the Pendle witches and so on and so forth. And, you know, and they talk about the devil that they spoke to, you know. And but what you need to understand when you're reading things like this is that this was heavily Christianized Britain. You know, we were Catholic or we were Protestant. There was nothing else.
Oh, we would have been Protestant by that point, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
No, well, no, both. We wouldn't. No, because it would have been... Wait, what are we talking about? Medieval or what? What time period are you talking about?
It's difficult because there's loads of evidence. Like, so if you look at the workings of... Say, for example, we would talk about a magical practitioner from Elizabethan times.
Yeah.
It's all... Like, everybody looks at... What's his name? Who was Queen Elizabeth's...
Judge John D. That's the only way I can remember his name, is the fact that he shares it with Judge John D.
Yeah, so you got John D, who, and people are like, he was a court magician, and it's like, yes, he was, but he did angelic
magic. Yeah, it was Enochian, so
it was
fine.
All Christian.
Yeah.
All of it was Christian. Mm-hmm. So it's like, so when you look at this stuff, and you go back to the folkloric stuff and all the rest of it, this is still Christianized Europe, right? So they didn't really have words for these spirits other than devils. The language of the time was they were devils at this point.
Yeah.
They weren't sprites and shit like that, you know.
Not in England. I mean, if you went to somewhere like Wales or
if you went to Wales
Ireland,
or Scotland, but those creatures had names.
Yes, they did.
Those creatures had names and wouldn't be referred to as a devil.
No, they wouldn't.
They would be a banshee. They would be a fucking boggart. They would be a brownie. They would be these things. They would refer to them as a red cap or, you know, as a selkie. Or you'd actually refer to them by the name that the spirit is. You wouldn't just call it a devil.
Yeah.
You know? And... it's that thing. So we talk about the folkloric devil and people are going, yes, I do magic with the folkloric devil. And I'm like, yeah, but it's still Christian.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and then to say that the folkloric devil isn't the devil, well, of course it is.
Yeah. It depends upon the context of what it is. Like, so if you're working with, let's say, for example, you go into the woods, right, and you make contact with a spirit and you decide to make a pact with said spirit after however much negotiation.
Yeah, yeah.
I would hope that you would have the sense to have negotiation. That doesn't necessarily make it a devil. It would just be a spirit.
Yes.
But we have the wordage now to give these things a proper name.
To have better agency.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So don't stop referring to it as a folkloric devil. It's a spirit. And it would be a spirit of, is it a spirit of place or is it some other kind of spirit? Like, discern what you're contacting and actually use the proper wordage. If, however, you're making, and this is what bothers me about certain individuals who will have no name.
There's plenty of them.
Though. There are plenty of them. However, I'm thinking of one specifically. I don't give a fuck. But like, they'll more than happily sit there and they'll say that they, you know, they've personally made pacts with this spirit and, you know, it's this and it's that and it's not the devil, it's the folkloric devil, it's very, very different. And then in the same breath, they'll talk about how their initiation with this spirit was to recite the Lord's Prayer backwards and to, like, you know, go around a church and like other rites.
Walk around the church backwards three times. Until the person accompanies you, the man in black then starts to do it with you, and like, then you're greeted by a black dog and
Or like a black toad, and then there are other rites around and you can read this in like Gemma Garry's books. And like which are where these rites come from. I mean, they come from like other legends and things like that, but you can find the information in Gemma Garry's books. Fine. Mm-hmm. But to say that this spirit that asks you to recite the Lord's Prayer backwards, go around churches on hallowed ground backwards, to produce the host, which is the most sacred of sacraments, and desecrate it by feeding it to a black toad for initiation. If what this spirit is asking you to do is tasks that surround like sacrilege and heresy and actively going against Christianity, then you can't then divorce the spirit from Christianity. It is a Christian spirit that is asking you to do these diabolical things.
Mm.
Therefore, it is a Christian devil. Mm. So if it's, you know, it'd be like
so
saying...
So it's still Christian magic.
It would be like me saying, oh, well, I went to India and I was, you know, in this kind of area and this spirit arrived to me and it was talking to me and asking me to desecrate an Indian temple to whatever spirit or whatever god and blah, 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 blah. Oh, but it has nothing to do with Hinduism.
Yeah.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
You know, if we're going to sit here and honestly talk about spirits of place and talk about other cultural spirits and give them respect and active, like, cultural context and meaning, then
yeah,
if you're...
That should also extend to Christianity.
Yeah, if you're communicating with a spirit that is asking you to do counterculture things within Christianity for its own benefit and for, you know...
Then, frankly, you're practicing Christianity. This is the thing that I often find with people, that they think that the devil is divorced from... I hate saying this because it gets me to go back into understandings, which I try and leave alone if I'm completely honest with you. But the devil is an agent of the Christian God.
Yeah, with a...
Full stop.
Yeah.
It doesn't. The devil does not exist outside of the Christian context.
No.
Because... that spirit belongs to that God,
yeah,
created the being that is then that devil. So to turn around and say that the folkloric devil that's making you go round the church backwards three times, feed the host and recite Lord's Prayer and all this stuff, which is blasphemous, and then go, but it's not Christian though, is just like, no, it is. The whole thing, including the spirit you're working with, is entirely within a Christian framework. And the whole thing is a Christian practice. It's blasphemous. I completely agree with you. But the blasphemy only exists because the Christianity exists.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be blasphemy if there was no Christianity. It would be gobbledygook.
Yeah. For those wondering as well, so talking at it from a Christian point of view, for those wondering why God would allow such a creature to exist.
There always has to be a bad guy.
Well, the whole point about true love and true devotion, because like God wants us, God loves us regardless. And this is going to lead into concepts of hell, which I have to talk about because it's a load of old bollocks, but
it is.
So the concept of hell is a lie. The church, the true church, teaches us that God loves us 100%. There's no ifs, buts, or maybes. It is 100% pure, true love. Regardless of what the church says, regardless of what hateful preachers say, God loves us. What God wants is for us to love them back. And that's what having a true relationship with God is. But how can you truly know what true love is if it's not tested? So we have spirits of temptation, and we have spirits that are there to lead us and tempt us off of track, because it's only when your love and faith are tested that you know whether it's true or not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole point. That's the point of temptation, is it's to lure you away or make you pull your eyes off of God for a moment, so that one, you realize what happens when you lose that, but also it's to make sure that when you do have it, you know that it's true and it's strong. And
how do you learn courage?
I don't know.
By being faced with hardship?
Yes.
How do you learn kindness? By doing the opposite of malice?
Yes.
How do you learn love? Through experiencing sorrow.
Oh.
It's all of those things, isn't it? You cannot have a good day.
No.
If you've never had a bad one.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they're all just days.
Yeah. If every day is a sunny day, then what's a sunny day?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I know that's a very, very dumbed down simplification.
Mm.
But, you know,
it's true, though.
Like within Druidry, you know, everything is considered part of nature. But you appreciate that an overabundance of rot is bad. Rot is not bad. Some things have to rot, but an overabundance of the thing is bad. You know, the same way that an overabundance of growth is bad, because sooner or later
it chokes everything.
It chokes, and you end up with monoculture, which doesn't work and ends up dying anyway. You know, which then goes back to that over, and these are often oversimplifications. So, you know, but the thing that is difficult with the folkloric devil is I find it takes away agency.
Mm.
It takes away agency from that spirit. It takes away agency from the practitioner. It's almost like you're giving all these excuses to something and not taking accountability for what you're actually doing. You're not taking the time. You can't just... fucking bothers me, right? I'm going to go on a tangent now. I'm taking off my glasses.
Do it.
It really bothers me that somebody has not taken the time to actually learn about the spirit that they're starting to work with. Like, did you ask its name? Did you ask what it knows, where it comes from, who it is? You know, if you're going to sit there and turn around and say that you do a lot of spirit work, but you only work with the folkloric devil, and it's like... And all these spirits are a version of the folkloric devil. Well, you've taken away all their agency.
Yeah.
But in the same breath, you're going to turn around and tell me that you're really respectful with the spirits that you work with in spirit contracts. That's not respectful.
Mm.
That's not genuine. I appreciate if your contract is for, I don't know, one moon cycle. You don't necessarily need to learn all of those things. But then don't turn around and tell me that your spirit familiar is the folkloric devil and you work with them every day. You don't even know who the fuck they are.
Yeah.
You've just given them an archetype.
Yeah.
Rather than actually working with them. And you hear people conflate Canunos, Hearn, you know, horned gods with they're just a version of the folkloric devil. No, and not. I'm just thinking to myself, I'm so glad they're not here currently, in this moment.
Yeah.
You know, speaking as somebody who thoroughly believes that, you know, when I was working with Dionysus, just a strange story. When I was really heavily working with Dionysus, I was learning his hymn, and I was reciting it on the way to work one day, and I'd almost polished it off completely, right? And I was wearing I'd made some golden, as a dedication to Dionysus, I'd finger knitted some golden bracelets and then tied them and knotted them around my ankles, right, to honor. Dionysus went on a journey. He was cast upon the earth and sent crazy to wander the realms, the world, the land, right? And he was picked up by these he was destitute and like drunk and mad off his fucking rocker in rags and all the rest of it. And he was bound and tied up to this ship. He was picked up by pirates who were going to sell him as a slave. And no matter how many times they tried to tie him up, the ropes would not bind him. They could not bind him because he was a god. And it wasn't until one of them realized who he was that this guy bowed and started praying and apologized and all the rest of it for they know not what they do sort of thing.
Yeah.
Dionysus had a moment of lucidity from the prayers that he was being offered and cursed all of the sailors, bar the one that had prayed to him, and brought the wood of the ship back to life, sprouting into the trees and vines and all the rest of it. And the ship grew and grew itself apart, like with That's these cool. vines and these weeds and the ivy that are part of, you know, his mythos. And the only person to survive was this person who managed to survive and float on a bit of wood to a beach where he was rescued and looked after, you know. And I remember one day I was going through this whole journey with Dionysus, and I was like, I'm going to wear these and they won't ever come off until you are happy and you are satisfied. And I got to work that day, and there was a homeless man I'd never met before outside my shop. And he was asleep, and he was somebody that would fit within my description of Dionysus loosely. And I was just like, that's a bit odd. And I'd never seen him in Bedford before. Never seen him before. And I knew most of them. You know, I'd been there years. Been working there years. And, you know, I went into the shop. I came back and I woke him up and I said, you're all right, buddy. I said, and he went, oh, I'll get out of the way. I went, no. You don't run away. I said, you're absolutely fine. I said, just get yourself sorted. Do you want a cup of tea or a cup of coffee? I'll get you a cuppa just before 9 o'clock. If you can make a move, because having a homeless person outside my front door puts people off. I can't then raise the money I need to raise to actually put towards the charity that is there to help you not be on the streets. So I'm not going to chase you away, but if you can wake yourself up and move on just for now, and then when we're shut again, you're welcome to come back to this sheltered bit. He understood completely, and he said, yeah, no problem. I said, can I make you a drink? He was like, yeah, I'll have a cup of coffee. Love that. How do you take your coffee? Milky, two sugars. So I was like, brilliant. Went back, made him a cup of coffee, two sugars, came back. I'd already boiled the kettle, so it literally took me 30, 60 seconds. He was gone. And from my shop, you could see right down the high street, right down the other way, and right down both roads. Like, he was gone. Nowhere to be seen. Absolutely fucking nowhere. And I thought to myself, huh, that's a bit weird. I hadn't noticed. But somebody found the thing that was wrapped around my ankle in the shop. It snapped that morning.
Ah,
I'd fulfilled my vow.
Yeah.
Right? So for somebody to turn around and go, Dionysus is just a folkloric devil.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? Like, you haven't given agency. You cannot. It is just... And it bothers me. That's why it bothers me. Because it's like... an example of somebody who turned around and said that putting masks on children during COVID when they didn't have to wear them was child abuse. And I was like, saying that undermines actual child abuse and devalues the real issues. Because if you're going to call the cops on this person who the kid just wants to take part in the thing that all the grown-ups are doing, then you're taking agency away from the actual issues that are going on in the world.
Yeah.
So really, the mentality really fucking pisses me off.
I get that.
Because it's just, it's not accountable. You're not being accountable.
Yeah.
Really not being accountable. So, and you're just trying to make magic a shortcut when it isn't.
Yeah. So I had a conversation with a certain person online who will remain nameless.
Oh, fuck my life.
You have no tea.
The tea is gone!
Tea is gone.
Sorry, I squeezed the bag.
And
I've got a bit of a frothy gob. Sorry.
It always works.
What, and, frothy gob?
No, when you squeeze the bag.
Oh, squeeze the bag, yeah.
Get, yeah. So I had a conversation with this person online, and we had this discussion about spirits, because they put forward, again, it was about the folkloric devil, and it was about making pacts with folkloric devil, and how they're a trickster spirit, blah, blah, blah. And I put forward the argument of how can you possibly trust a trickster spirit? Mm. How can you trust a spirit that is notoriously classed as deceptive, tricky, cunning, ancient? How could you ever believe a promise or a bargain made by a spirit like that? Or trust that you're going to come off better? Because even if...
And trust it when it says, oh, I'm not the actual devil, I'm just a folkloric devil.
Okay. No. But like, even if we step away from the Christian aspect of it and we look at it purely from like a pagany point of view, like, if you're communing with spirits who, for all intents and purposes, let's say, could be considered like fairies or within mm-hmm. the realm... excuse me. Like, notoriously, yes, okay, they speak truth, but they're very cunning with the truth, and they'll...
Yes.
Yeah, and you've got to be very, very clever to not make promises with these spirits, because they can bind you in all kinds of ways.
Yeah.
No, they haven't lied, but they've run rings around you.
It's the Aes Sedai.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
If you know what... If you've watched Wheel of Time, the Aes Sedai can't lie.
No.
They always tell the truth.
But it may not be the truth
It may not be the truth you expect to hear.
So... That kind of thing. So I put forward this, and we went on this kind of back and forth communication where they were like, well, yeah, but, you know, they're cunning, they're not deceptive. Well, okay, if you actually look up the actual description of these words, they it all lies and works around things like illusion, manipulation, you know, deception, cunning. They all kind of fall within the same wheelhouse. He's like, well, they're not, you know, these spirits, you know, they're not lying. They're not lying to you. And I'm like, well, they kind of are.
Not, no. Yeah. They're
manipulating the truth to suit their own ends.
If they're saying something knowing that your perception of it will...
It's like... not their fault. You're not smart enough to understand what they're saying.
Yeah.
And...
And not my problem. You're too thick to understand what I'm telling you.
Yeah. So we went on this back and forth and they were like, well, no, it's cunning. And that's why, you know, that's why they're called, you know, the cunning men. They're not. That's not the reason. But he's like, you know, the cunning folk, because you have to be smart to understand and make deals with these spirits. Okay. That's a bullshit answer as far as I'm concerned. You know, it wasn't a suitable answer. And it negated the point of your having a conversation with spirits that are being tricky.
This is the thing, isn't it? Like, we had this conversation about King James earlier. You can't call King James a homosexual.
No, because the word didn't exist.
Because the word didn't exist when King James was banging boys.
Yeah.
Like, historically speaking, you know, like, what was it? Druids. Druids. Yes? We call them druids. They didn't call themselves druids.
No.
We call them druids now. Cunning men. Like, these are all terms that we've created these days. People with neurodiversity, that word did not exist before the 1990s.
No.
So...
Well, you would have been either, like, weird or you would have been eccentric.
Exactly.
Cunning folk, it's a word that kind of comes from...
A cunning man wouldn't have known he was a cunning man, is my point.
Well, they did use the term, but it was things like... So it comes from things like to ken, so to understand. So these were people that understood, they knew the ways of things. Medicine, spiritual law. You went to a cunning man because you wanted to find treasure, or someone had stolen something from you, or someone had hexed you. So you went to them to understand, to find out who, and to get a remedy. They were the kenning, like to ken, kenning to understand.
Yeah.
So to say, oh, it's because you're cunning. No.
They have knowing.
Yeah.
Not cunning.
So anyway, so we had this kind of back and forth chat, and then it ended up basically saying, well, I suppose I said, you know, well, I'm looking at this from a Christian point of view, so why would I make a pact with a trickster spirit that's trying to tempt me away from God? And they're like, well, I'm not, you know, I don't see it that way, so no. But their whole reference for that spirit falls within a Christian context. So it's like, well, okay, fine. So you're just lying to yourself. Or at least this spirit that you've made a deal with has pulled the wool over your eyes to the point where you're blind to the evidence that's put right in front of you.
Yeah.
I do want to just touch on, seeing as how we're talking of devils and the devil, I do want to just talk about hell for a moment. Let's just take it down a notch.
You want to talk about hell? She wants to talk about hell. Everybody listening, story time.
This is important. So, this is important because there's a lot of misinformation about hell and what hell is, and people think it's this kind of fiery inferno.
Are you going to talk about Padre Pio's thing?
No.
Oh.
This fiery inferno hell pit of pain and torture and eternal suffering, and it's a load of all rubbish. If we look at the Bible and we look at what the Bible actually says, the word hell has been mistranslated and inserted into the Bible. It didn't exist back when the Bible was written. The original wordage back then was, one, either they used the term Sheol, which is the underworld, or literally like netherworld or place below. So it's when they put a body in the ground, they were just below. They were in Sheol. They were in a place of suspension, or they're in the netherworld. That then, and you can see this in the Bible, when it was translated into Greek, they didn't have a true understanding of what that meant. The only thing that they could equate it to was Hades. So Hades is inserted into the Bible a few times, which when you look at what Hades actually is, it's a place where if you can't pay the tithes, you spend eternity suffering, basically. Or if you can pay your tithes, you then go on to good things or a place where you're supposed to be.
Yeah. Yeah, there's different levels of
Hades and stuff. Yeah, and then that kind of gets mistranslated again, and then we start to get this kind of emerging image of what hell, in air quotes, is. But when Jesus talks about hell, he isn't. Again, it's a mistranslation. When Jesus was talking about hell, he was actually referring to the Valley of Hinnom, or Gehenna, which was a place outside of Jerusalem, which was a place in the physical world, where people used to throw rubbish and like all kinds of horror. It was basically a massive pit that was hot and stinky, and it was full of sharp objects, and sinners, really bad sinners, were flung in there, basically cast out of Jerusalem. So to be flung into Gehenna is a place of suffering. So when Jesus in the Bible is referring to hell, he isn't actually referring to this kind of mythological dimension of pain and suffering. He's literally referring to a physical place in the world called Gehenna, or the Valley of Hinnom. So don't do this, or you will be thrown into this place. If we look at what hell actually is from a spiritual point of view, hell is self-inflicted punishment. So when we look at what demons and devils are doing, if we're looking at it from this kind of folkloric devil point of view, if God is love and beauty and comfort and peace, and the whole idea of Catholicism is to be in union with God, to turn away from that and to reject it completely, all you're left with is emptiness and suffering and darkness. So when a spirit or a devil in this way entices a person away from God and actively gets them to reject God, it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be a fiery pit, because all you're going to be left with afterwards is emptiness and darkness. It'd effectively be like waking up in a dark room with no one there and a feeling of eternal emptiness because you've rejected all light. It doesn't mean to say that you can't then reconnect, and it doesn't mean to say that you can't make that amendment or atonement.
Souls are redeemed, aren't they?
They are, all the time. Something like that. And that's what we read in the Bible. When Jesus died and went to quote-unquote hell, he effectively went to this netherworld. If you can imagine how I see it in my head, is you've got loads of people in a dark room wandering around. You know, in The Legend of Korra, when they're flung into that valley with that smoke spirit, and they lose their minds a bit, they forget who they are, and they're all just wandering around. They and then he has that moment of clarity and disperses it all. And they're just all standing there, completely unaware of each other, but they're all just standing there. I kind of imagine it to be like that, like a room of darkness with everyone standing there, kind of unaware that they're all there, all a bit lost and lonely with their own thoughts and, you know, whatever. And then all of a sudden, it would be like when Jesus arrived in that area, it would be like seeing the sunrise for the first time. Like a wonderful light that kind of disperses all that. And then he brought everyone to heaven. And that's when he rose. So, yeah, yes, there is a hell. But the only hell that we're talking about in this concept is a complete and utter rejection of God and God's love and God's tenets. And that kind of pit of loneliness, I suppose.
I'm so going
but to it's hell. It's self-inflicted. There is no fiery pit. There is no pain, no demons poking and prodding you. It's just purely self-inflicted. And what happens is that, like, when people are like, oh, you know, I've made pacts with demons and blah 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 and devils, and, you know, I have this contract with the folkloric devil, as far as it's concerned, it doesn't really give a fuck what you want, because if in that moment it's caused you to turn away from God, it's served its purpose. It's achieved what it wanted. It's got you to do its thing. It's not about getting you to kill babies and, like, eat people and murder people and do bad deeds. In that moment, you've chosen to turn away from God and enter that kind of realm of nothingness. Doesn't mean there's no, you know, you can always be redeemed, because God is love and God loves you.
And it also doesn't...
And God wants you to come home.
It also doesn't mean that you don't have a place in the... All right. It also doesn't mean that you don't have a place in the afterlife of whatever belief you have. You know, there's... I can't remember.
Well, this is obviously...
There's a thing, isn't there?
Here, about... Like, this is coming from a purely Christian point of view.
Yeah.
And from a purely Christian point of view, there is only this. Nothing else exists.
Nice.
So we have to take that into concept. So if, however, you are like Clinton and you believe in other things...
Well, I don't have to worry.
You don't have to worry. But then you're not going to go around making pacts with Christian devils.
No, and that's going to bring me to something else, actually. Demonolatry. I'm quite new to the to the practice of demonolatry. Actually, not as new as I'd like to think I am. I'm quite new to the term of demonolatry. However, working with specific demons or devils or whatever, again, it's all ceremonial magic. All ceremonial magic is done under the power of God.
Yes.
Which means it's still Christian.
Yes.
Which means it's still within that context. And I just, I find what's strange is when that's given respect and agency and, you know, is listened to, but the Catholic perspective is belittled and not respected. And I just think to myself, that's really like two-faced. That's like double standards, which is something I really cannot stand in the world, you know, because it takes an element of self-ignorance to not see that.
Yeah.
You know, to see that there's an entire practice of working with demons that is totally motivated, and the commanding of demons is only done through the power of God. And to give that agency and respect, and then in the next breath, belittle and, you know, talk badly about Christianity and Catholicism and so on and so forth. Every religion, I can tell you now, every religion in the world has its era and its historical era of genocide. Christianity and Catholicism, Hinduism, Buddhism, they all have a genocide somewhere. All of them.
Yeah.
All of them do. You don't have to dig too far to say that Buddhism, I know there are probably people who are cringing at that and saying, no, there isn't, but it depends on the type of Buddhism.
Yeah.
There are, you know, different types. There is not just the Tibetan love and light, peace Buddhism, you know, and every country that has a religion has a story of genocide. Yeah. So you cannot just blame the Christians all
and
the time.
Like, no, and you can't. And even like a lot of the pagan-y faiths, you know, they all had barbarous intent. Oh, fuck's sake.
Romans were bastards.
Yeah.
It does make me laugh when people go, yeah, the Christians took all our holy sites. No, they didn't. The Romans did it.
Yeah.
The Romans did it. It's called syncretization. We learnt it from them. You know, so on and so forth.
I know everyone's loving the whole Norse pagan vibe at the moment, but I mean, they went around the world taking slaves and raping people.
They were slave traders.
So, yeah. But basically, the main point of this is, you know, discernment. Do a discernment on your spirit. If you want to work within a Christian context, if the spirit you are talking to identifies themselves as a devil, and if they're asking you to commit acts that are, well, anti-Christian, so like reciting the Lord's Prayer backwards, going around churches backwards,
blasphemous,
causing sacrilege in holy sites, all that kind of stuff.
Own it.
Then, no.
But if you're going to do it, own it. Don't pretend it's something else.
Own it. If it is that, then yes. And if that's what you want, then fine. But yeah, like Clint said, own it. Like, admit that you are in contact with an actual devil.
And you're not practicing something in a Christian context. Yeah,
not a folkloric spirit. If it's a folkloric spirit, that's fine.
Take time.
Folkloric spirit is it?
Yeah.
So it's all about discernment and knowledge. And also, like, applying the same discernment with the people that you choose to listen to online, because it's all very good and well having...
Even us.
Like, shiny people that you think, oh my God, they're amazing. And, you know, I love the stuff they do and I love the content they put out. Great. But the information they put out, you know, while it may be inspiring, it still requires discernment, because while it may work for them, it might not necessarily work for you. And you've got to also you've got to understand that if these people have also made pacts with certain spirits, they may also be being compelled not to say all the information detailing said spirit, because one, maybe they can't because of the contract. Two, maybe the spirit wants them to lie about what they truly are so that other people can be tempted in. There's lots to kind of consider. So you've got to, like, listen with more than just your ears.
There's also an element of this giving a spirit an opportunity to cop out. So spiritual context is, like, what's his name? Wrinkled Foreskin or whatever his name was.
Rumpelstiltskin.
That's him.
Wrinkled foreskin.
Like, having his name gave you agency over who he was.
Yes.
Now, if you're a denizen of a world whereby your sovereignty and the only thing that makes you what you are when you're a shapeshifter is your name, is the only thing that is stable, that never changes, it's the only thing you have true ownership of, giving somebody access to that piece of power when you have no form to call your own, no place to call your own, but you do, the only thing you have is a name, you know, within spiritual contexts, why would you then share that piece of information with a human?
Yeah.
You know, it would give them more power than you were really comfortable with. And it's very rare, really, to get a true name from a spirit. They'll give you the name of what they are for now, or you'll get an aspect of what they are, or you'll get a thing. And
but we have that as well, right?
We do, we do. Yeah, we do. Magical names. And if we have, and if we step forward and take a contract with a spirit that says, I want you to know me as the folkloric devil, and you don't get any further than that, fine. But again, I think it's about accountability and owning up to it. You know, and owning up to that thing. If the character that you are working with says, I'm a folkloric devil, and then you don't enact any Christian blasphemy or anything like that, then fine. That's still a folkloric devil outside of the, I can't ever see, but just out of curiosity and just out of whatever, I can't ever actually see that ever taking place.
Uh-uh.
I'm really struggling to speak now. I can't see that happening. But from personal experience, I've worked with spirits and I've never known their name because their name was the thing that they treasured more than anything. You know, when the gift of sovereignty is the name that you're given, you wouldn't give that gift away to anybody else. Mm. And then there are other spirits that have more than one name, so they're happy to give you one of them. You know, and like you say, we do have, we're a million different people to a million different people in our human lives. You know, I'm not the same Clinton to you as I am to Wayne, as I am to my boss. You know, I mean, I'm pretty similar, but
But you have a magic name that you go by.
I have two.
Yeah.
One again, that no one's ever heard.
They're for like self-preservation, aren't they, really?
Yes. Yeah. So I have a magical name and I also know my true name. But that's something that I only share with, my true name is something I only ever share with my gods.
Okay.
And in times of desperation, I will hand over the agency and my sovereignty. I give back my sovereignty to those that gave it to me,
mm-hmm.
for them to act with me or help me, you know. And by that ultimate surrender, that ultimate offering of I'm giving it all back, it's the ultimate sacrifice, and it often pays dividends to do so. I always get the answer or the response or the help I need.
That's good.
It's just another opportunity of offering. It's just another type of offering, really, at the end of the day. It's not, so when you have nothing else and you're just like, I just give you everything I am, here it is. I'm surrendering completely, please help me. You know, it's the ultimate sacrifice to spirits that love you, so
yeah,
they come forward.
I don't think I really have that. I mean, we have saint names that we take on when we get confirmed, so
that's about it.
I suppose that'd be about it, really.
Yeah. Something you could step.
But I don't need that with Jesus.
Jesus?
Because he knows me.
Brimming with Jesus.
He knows me, body and whole.
Gross.
Yes.
And on that note, I think we're done.
We're done.
Yes. So you can find us on Instagram, you can find us online, you can find us whatever. And on podcast providers and all sorts.
Yes.
And, by all means, if you want to get in touch, do get in touch. If you have any questions or things about the devil or anything that we've talked about today, then please get in touch, and then we'll talk about you.
Yeah. Stay away from Satan.
Goodbye.